Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live.
Yay!
So I want to welcome the wonderful, super talented, super fabulous, super califragic, multi author, Tammy Sauer. Welcome.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Tickled pink. You can see how pink I am.
You are pink.
I am. it's a little bit of a lighting thing, but I am a little pink today. There's a story here somewhere, but you've already covered pigs. Anyway, before I forget, my name is Mel Rosenberg, that I remember. I am the host of the Children's Literature Network, the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And my guest is the wonderful Tammy Sauer. Welcome to the show, Tammy. I sound like the Muppets.
Well, very happy to be here. I'm excited for our conversation.
And we are celebrating. You wanted to celebrate the underpants. That didn't sound good. We want to celebrate your new picture book, The Underpants, but you have four or five other books that just came out.
Yes, so, I have one coming out in 2022. So, but The Underpants is the most recently published.
You wouldn't happen to have a copy somewhere?
Well, I don't know. So this is The Underpants, and it came out October 4th with Scholastic Press. And the illustrator is Joran Cole, and this is his first picture book. And I just could not have been happier with the art for this book. I mean, look at this cover. It is just so full of funniness and joy, and I love the expressions. And anyway, cannot believe it's his first book. So could not have been happier.
And you are quoted as saying that if you want to succeed in the picture books, you have to write your weirdness.
Not really write to your weirdness. I say celebrate the weird stuff in life because it's good material for stories. I tell that to kids all the time in school visits. I tell that to writers when we're at writing conferences. Just pay attention to the stuff that kind of, seems just a little weird or a little funny and see if that can maybe lead you into an idea for a story.
Okay, I hope I'm not surprising you by telling you that you're not the first author I've interviewed who's written a picture book on underpants, but for me, it's a really weird topic. It's one that I wouldn't touch. That's also bad. So run us through the underpants and read a little bit and show us a few, show us a few double spreads.
You got to stop this.
If you have children listening to this video cast or podcast, please put them away right now.
Okay, but now they can come back because I will not be inappropriate.
But I might.
Okay, well, they're just taking a risk. Well, the underpants, how this book got its start was my editor, Ken Geist at Scholastic, contacted my agent and said that he thought I'd be a good fit for a book called The Underpants. He said that he had talked with a lot of the people at the Scholastic book fairs, and there was some interest generated by some of those people for a book with that title and to have it be a play on the book, The Mitten, which Jan Brett has written. And there are many different versions of the book. It's based on an old Ukrainian folktale. Well, I used to teach pre-K. And when I taught pre-K, I loved sharing The Mitten with the kids. We would act it out. It would just be the best. And so when Ken approached my agent, Laura Renner, and asked if this would be something I'd be interested in. I mean, right away, I was like, yes. but I knew my take had to be different than Jan Brett's take and Alvin Tressolt's take. And so what I did was I decided to change the cast of characters. They're not woodland animals. They're all farm animals. I set this in a scene that's very much like my childhood home. And I really amped up the silliness. And so that's how my take on that old Ukrainian folktale became a book. So this is The Underpants, again, illustrated by Joran Cole. And it starts off, we see, hold on. This is hard to do. I usually have it up like as a part of a PowerPoint. So there's the title page and you already get a little foreshadowing. You see this kitty peeking through the window, noticing that fresh pile of laundry and farmers. He has his coffee. He's getting ready to start his day. And I'll just read a few spreads. One chilly morning, Kitty pounced on a farmer's fresh pile of laundry. She made an unexpected discovery. "Ah," said Kitty, "I love this cozy coat." And when I share it with kids, they all panic. They're like, "It's not a coat, it's underpants." It was a perfect fit. Kitty sauntered outside for a trip around the barnyard. "Kitty," said Dog, "what are you doing in those underpants?" Kitty looked as proud as a kitty could. "It's a coat," said Kitty. "Oh," said Dog, "is there room enough for me?" And there was, barely. And so that's how it gets its start. And they go around the farmyard. And as they're going around the farmyard, more and more animals, they are pointing out that this underpants, and they're like, "No, it's a coat." And the other animals are like, "Oh, can I be a part of this too?" And then I have to show you my favorite line. So, okay, this is probably my favorite line of anything I've written in the history of anything I've written. So Cow's getting ready to join. And as you can see, all of the animals are a little bit nervous about this situation. And it says, "Well, move over," said Cow. "Here I come." Now, this is my favorite spread ever. It was a tidy whitey fit. And I love this. Originally, they had this as a one-pager. And I talked to my editor and I'm like, no, this requires a two-page spread because it's such a big moment in the book and it's so funny. And it really gives an opportunity for Joran's art to shine. So that's a little bit of The Underpants.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
How does it end?
Sorry. I cannot tell you how it ends, but I will tell you at the very, very end, there's an art note. And at the art note, it describes my love of the mitten. And it also lets you know that this book is dedicated to some of my favorite teachers because I wanted to thank them for all of their support. Anyway, The Underpants.
Including your university professor who told you to become a writer.
Oh, I've dedicated other books to her. These are for elementary, middle school, and high school age teachers. But okay. I did have that college professor who was instrumental in me becoming a writer. I would not have become a writer if it wasn't for Dr. Marjorie Hancock from Kansas State University.
Yay. So always good to give credit to professors.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
Okay. So let's talk about you. By the way, I haven't read all of your 30 some odd picture
35
books.
35 so far, and then I've got more coming out. I know.
I'm sure you do, and we'll talk about them. So my favorite part is from the train a lion?
Caring for your lion?
Caring for your lion.
Oh,
you
want to
guess? I'm sure you do. What is my favorite?
I don't have all of them on the shelf behind me. This is just my Zoom setup. So I just have a few that fit on my shelf.
That's what they all say. You need a caravan for all your books.
Oh my goodness. This book, I love it too. This book is illustrated by Troy Cummings. And have you ever seen what's underneath the jacket? Hold on.
No.
Troy is so funny. He made it look like a pizza box because there's some pizza, there's a pizza scene in this book. And it says, "Caring for your lion since 1925. Serengeti Brothers Pizza." And then the toppings are tomato, olive, mushrooms, green pepper, spinach, pineapple, sausage, pepperoni, gazelle, giraffe, buffalo, zebra, and rhino. I mean, so funny. So yeah, it was a joy to work on this book. So
what is my favorite line from that book?
Oh gosh, what is your favorite line in this book? Hold
it's
on.
From
let me
number,
just,
it's from number.
Let me just, oh, hold on. I'm not gonna tell let me you. See. Let me see. I don't know if it'll be your favorite line, but it's my favorite. Expect a teensy bit of shedding. Is that your favorite line?
No.
Oh, what's your favorite line?
Try again. It's fill. I'm paraphrasing. Fill the bathtub with equal parts.
That's like
water and lion.
Oh, okay. It says post bath, your lion is half his normal size. Is that it? And then it says, do not panic. Is that it?
No, isn't there one where it says fill the bathtub with one part water and one part lion?
This is your favorite scene. So tell me, what's your favorite line?
Fill the bathtub with one part lion and one part water.
Oh, yeah. It says, at bath time, fill the tub with equal parts water and lion. That is a good line. It's been so long since I've read this book. So thanks for bringing it up.
It's my pleasure. That's my job today, to remind you of things that you've written.
Yeah, I was like, that's pretty good. Now I need to step up my game so I write another good line like that.
Absolutely. So now take us back to the beginning of Tammy Sauer in a town with like six inhabitants.
It feels like six inhabitants.
Victoria, Wyoming or something.
Victoria, Kansas, population about 2,000. No stoplights in Victoria, Kansas. I love this town. I was just back there visiting in the town. I visited with family. I stopped and visited my favorite middle school teacher. It was a good place to grow up. And I didn't grow up in town. I grew up outside of town. I grew up on a tiny farm. And on our farm, we had a horse, we had cows, we had ducks, we had chickens, we had geese, we had dogs, we had cats. But most of all, we had pigs. We always had hundreds and hundreds of pigs on the farm. And I think because I grew up on that farm, I think that's why many, many of my books star farm animals. So if you look at my collection, I bet probably about 10 out of the 35 take place on farms.
And you're not the first farm girl that I've interviewed. I'm thinking that one way to picture book stardom is to grow up on a farm.
It worked for me. So
it sure did. So, I have to assume that if you grew pigs, you're not really Jewish.
No, I'm not, but I don't eat much meat. So I don't eat any pork. I don't eat any beef. But I don't eat any fish, but I will eat chicken and I'll eat some turkeys. But yeah, no pork for me.
And for me, neither. So, here's the thing, okay? I'm going to say this before I forget to say it, because the books that you write are weird and wonderful, and yet they have Hollywood endings. Everything comes out good in the end. We're going to talk about Avery in a few minutes.
Okay.
And he saves the day.
It's like vintage Tammy Sauer.
Yeah. And I can bring you to more recent books. And he's like the hero, right? But at the end of the day, he still rides the cow instead of the horse. He's still allergic to horses. He won't eat grits and beans. And you have, because you're such a nice person, I think you have trouble being mean. And then when I was looking at this book, and it's funny that you should mention it, because I was looking at it today and I saw all these pizzas with, rhinoceros pizza. And it's funny, but it's just a little bit, it's not vegetarian
sometimes.
So I was saying, okay, that's the other side of Tammy that I would like to read more of.
She pops out quite a bit. So just got read all 35 books and I'm sure you'll find lots little tidbits of it.
Okay. I was actually wondering what I'm going to do in 2023. So maybe I'll just.
There you go. Now you got a plan. Got a hobby.
And I'll tell you what the problem is. By the time I read your 35 books, you'll have published 35 more.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah.
It's totally Sisyphic. Okay. So you're a tiny little girl on a farm in Kansas, like Dorothy. And then what happened?
Well, I was planning to be an elementary school teacher. I went to Kansas State University and that was the game plan.
No.
Yeah.
My interviews center on Tammy as a 4 or 5 year old.
Oh.
If you write picture books, you must be a 5 year old.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's like inside, like when I'm writing, it's like I can think and feel like a 5 or 6 year old. I mean, it's easy to tap into that. I had a brother and a sister, and we were on the farm. So we were like always doing outdoorsy things and building forts. And we got lots of snow when I was a kid. And so I remember our dad like pulling us on our sleds with his tractor down the fields. And it was just a good way to grow up. And I can remember the joy of that and the wonder of childhood. And I can just, I can, for some reason, it's easy for me to kind of tap into what would be funny to a kid that age. You don't want it to be too funny, because like a lot of kids won't get things, but sometimes I include extra funny things for older people because I want my adult readers to be having some fun too.
So, but were you a goofy 5-year-old? Were you weird?
I don't think I was weird. I think I was kind of quiet when I went to school. And then I think as I got older, I became more extroverted, but I'm also very introverted. I love to be by myself, but I also love hanging out with people too, but I like to do it in a good balance.
And you've been writing since you could write.
I've been writing. I tell kids at school visits that all of the writing you're doing right now helps you to be a better writer. Whether you're writing a poem or a letter or in your diary, every bit of writing is some good writing practice, because I tell them it's just like playing an instrument or playing a sport. I ask them, how did you get better? And they're like, practice. And I'm like, it's the same thing with writing. The more you do it, the better you get at it. So I did not become an author. So I've been writing and writing and writing and writing. And I even remember when I was in high school, I had lots of pen pals. In middle school, I had pen pals. I still have a couple of the same pen pals. All of that writing, but I never planned to be an author. That didn't even cross my mind as a job.
So what were your favorite subjects?
My favorite subject.
Before college.
I would say it probably was like language arts. I loved digging in and doing good grammar. I thought that was like fun, because it was almost like mathematical to kind of get it all organized, kind of like a puzzle. In middle school, that teacher that I visited last week, she was big on diagramming sentences. So I was like, that was like almost a game to diagram sentences. I just really enjoyed the experience of being in school. I love being with my friends. When you are in a small town, you're involved in everything. I mean, I played sports. I was a cheerleader. I was on the dance team, but I wasn't like super coordinated at any sports. But when you're in a small town, everybody does everything.
You have that episode of being a cheerleader. And
yeah,
tell us about that one.
Oh, you mean about falling, like chasing pig? Oh, God. Okay, so
Before the show, I asked you whether I could ask you any question.
Yes, yeah, so said, in eighth grade, this would have been my eighth grade year or my freshman year, but because we had hundreds of pigs, sometimes we had over 1,000 pigs, and pigs are smart. Pigs always know how to get out of the pen, and my dad would have them organized in different pens around the farm according to size, but it was just like one of those things that they would break out. And if one pig gets out, then the others are just going to follow. And then your whole yard is covered in pigs. And my mom did not like that. So whenever somebody noticed that the pigs were out, then somebody would say, the pigs are out. And all of us had to race outside and chase those pigs back to where they belonged. And it did not matter what time it was. It did not matter what you were doing. It did not matter if you were getting ready to go cheer at the basketball game later that day. You had to get out there. And so, and like sometimes it was in the mud. And I remember wearing those big overshoes that you wear over your shoes. And they would be like my dad's, which didn't fit. And so, you know, sometimes you get stuck in the mud and then you just like kind of like tip over if it just doesn't go well. So, but that was just part of it. So there you have it. Very glamorous life I lead.
No, I think it's fine. So then you finished the high school.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you went to college in the big city?
I went to college in Manhattan, Kansas. They call it the Little Apple. Loved Manhattan. That's still one of my favorite towns. It was such a good place. It was beautiful. It was close to Kansas City. It's close to Torrance.
Does it have a little Empire State Building?
No,
a little Central Park.
Not that I've ever seen, but it was a beautiful, beautiful place to spend a lot of years. Cause I went to school there, and then I taught at a school near Manhattan. So I ended up being able to live in this wonderful place for 6 years, but I went to K-State to get my degree in elementary ed. And during my senior year of college, my language arts professor pulled me aside and she said, Tammy, you have a gift with words. You should pursue publication. And again, had she not said that, it would have never occurred to me to become an author. And she was such a wonderful teacher. She started every class period by reading a picture book to us. It was the best thing to walk into her class. And you got to relax a little bit. Then all of a sudden, she shared a story. And I think that helped foster my love of picture books as a grown-up.
Okay, so what picture books were you read to?
Oh, goodness. My parents were busy. I mean, my dad was busy being a farmer. And if you're a farmer, you're working like from 6 until like 11. And my mom, she was getting her master's degree when I was little. Plus, she was teaching full time. Plus, she had 3 little kids. And so I feel like I wasn't read to very much. But I do remember having the book, The Pokey Little Puppy. So every time I see that, like at the grocery store or, you know, at Barnes and Noble, every time I see it, I'm like, oh, because that's the one book I can remember being read to. But my parents were readers. I remember my dad loved reading books about the war and all kinds of nonfiction books. And my mom loved like the romance novels. And then later on, she got into Amish fiction. And it was just like, my mom was a big reader, like throughout her whole life.
Hold everything. Are you from an Amish background?
No, not at all. But she picked up one book one day and she kind of was like, oh, and then she kind of got hooked on it. And so anyway, so it was like romance novels for a while. And then it was Amish fiction. So if somebody's wanting, I don't know, to try something new, I guess there's an option.
Something weird and wonderful. Okay. So your professor, Dr. Marjorie Hancock, mm-hmm. put you on the yellow brick road to start.
I mean, all she did was say that sentence. I mean, that is it. And it was just
that's all you need to say.
I know, because I tell kids at school visits this too. It's just like having somebody believe in you that really helps you to believe in yourself and that gets you excited. And so I tell teachers a lot, I'm like, notice what your kids are good at and mention it to them because they might not know it. And it's just good to hear it. It's very encouraging. And so yeah, it really, I mean, that is why I do what I do, is because of that one conversation.
And you're like a master craftsman, not only with the story, but also with the words.
Oh, yes.
Wordy Birdie, is that a little bit Tammy Sauer?
That is a little bit Sierra Ricky, my niece. Sierra, when she was 4, she would just talk like, she lived in Texas at the time, so I didn't get to see her very often. I still don't get to see her very often, but I remember when she was 4 and she would talk to me on the phone, it was like this big run-on sentence. And I was like, oh my goodness. And so when the words Wordy Birdie came to me, it was just one of the ideas that I had jotted down in Tara Lazar's Story Storm one day was Wordy Birdie, because I liked it. It was a rhyming thing. It already tells you a little bit about the character. And then I remembered little Sierra, who's now 14. And I decided I need to give this a try. And it was so fun to write a picture book with a lot of words, because she was just like, talk, 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 talk. Because usually I'm so used to paring things down. And I love to do that. It feels like a puzzle to pare down a picture book into the best words possible. But with Wordy Birdie, she just talked and talked. And so it was a different feel. And even when, let me see if I have that one. I don't. Oh, yeah, I do. So if you look closely on the cover, you see words. My editor said, can you come up with a lot of content that Wordy Birdie might be saying on the cover of the book? And so there are extra words here. And then when we did the flaps, she wanted me to write the flaps, but write it in Wordy Birdie's way. And then even when we did our author and illustrator information, she wanted me to interject Wordy Birdie there too, because Wordy Birdie interrupts because she's so excited to tell you everything she's got to say. And I thought that was a really genius idea that my editor, Frances Gilbert, had.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I haven't known you all that long, but I'm going to suggest that there's a little bit of Wordy Birdie in Tammy Sauer.
What?
And there's a little bit of Wordy Birdie in you, and maybe it's a sublimated version, because you said that you're introverted, but you're not introverted in your writing.
No, I feel like I'm a good balance. I mean, if I had to be by myself every day, all day, then that would not be great. But I do, I always make sure I have like lunch dates with somebody. I'm like, I just had lunch with a friend yesterday, and on Friday I'm going to a movie, and then on this weekend my daughter's coming home. And so I love it, but then I also just love that, and it helps me to, I don't know, just, I guess, I don't know, grounds me a little bit just to be by myself a little bit too. So
I can tell you that since I started writing in earnest, I've become much less friendly because you need this time to be with yourself and write.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah. So, but this show is about you. So you finished college and you had this approbation. Is that a good word? And you say to yourself, oh, I don't want to be a teacher. I want to be a picture.
No,
book writer.
That didn't happen at all.
I know. You became a teacher.
I became a library media specialist because there was this job opportunity, and I was, this is like 1995. And so I had just learned about the internet. It was a big year. I just got my first email address. So I started grad school the summer after I graduated from Kansas State to get my degree in library science. And then I had a job that started in that August. And so I had a school that was pre-K through eighth grade. So I did library sessions with pre-K through sixth grade. And then I did stuff with middle schoolers as needed. Plus after I got the job, they said, oh, by the way, you'll also be teaching middle school electives, because I think that happens a lot in teaching. You get a lot of those, oh, by the way. And at first I was petrified because I was 22 and these people were like 13 and 14, but I loved working with those kids. And my two electives were storytelling and writing. So I got to choose exactly what I wanted to do. So that was super fun for me. So I did that for a couple of years, but I'd always thought about Dr. Hancock, thinking, you know, maybe. And then we moved to Albuquerque and I had my daughter and I was teaching pre-K and I was still thinking, well, maybe. And then my daughter, and then I had my son. And then when my daughter was, I think she was either three or four, it was when she was in preschool, there was an illustrator who visited her school. And I happened to run into him in the hall, and just seeing somebody who was in that business just made my heart pound a little bit. And I thought, I want to be a part of that too. And so after I left the school, I went to Barnes and Noble and I got the latest copy of the Children's Writers and Illustrators Market Guide. And I decided that I needed to make writing a priority, because that time since Dr. Hancock said something until Julia was like three or four, I would dabble in writing a little bit, like write for a week, stop for a month, write for 2 days, stop for a year. But when I saw an illustrator, I thought, oh, I've got to do this. And so I was very fortunate in that I was able to get my kids to simultaneously nap for 2 hours every day. I call this my greatest accomplishment as a human being, because that was gold. And during those 2 hours, I would not read People magazine. I would not talk to my mom on the phone. I wouldn't do laundry. I wouldn't sleep. During those 2 hours, I was going to figure out how to be a children's picture book author. And so I spent those 2 hours reading picture books, trying to write picture books. They were terrible. And then reading books about how to write picture books. And so those 2 hours to me were what helped me to kind of just get in that mindset that I want to do this. I really want to give it a good go.
And then what happened?
Well, I wrote some really bad stories. And then so in 2004, so I'd been writing probably about a year at this point. My husband and I, we tucked Mason into bed. He was our baby. And we tucked Julie into bed, who was like our three-year-old. And we were getting ready to sit down and watch a movie. Then we heard this big knock at the door and we weren't expecting anybody. So we went to go open the door and there was a kid standing there and he said, hi, I'm selling newspaper subscriptions. I'm trying to raise some money. I want to go to cowboy camp. Well, this kid didn't look like a cowboy or act like a cowboy or walk like a cowboy. And at first I thought, ooh, I hope this kid will be okay. And then I thought, oh, that's a great idea for a story. So I wrote Cowboy Camp about a kid named Avery.
Was that his name?
No, I have no idea what this kid's name was. I just thought Avery just didn't sound very cowboy-like. So I wrote this book about a kid named Avery who goes to cowboy camp.
He should get 100 free books. Avery, wherever
he should.
You are.
I mean, he's probably in his 30s now.
He probably doesn't even know.
Oh, he doesn't. There's no way.
But we know a few things about him. He's in his 30s and his name isn't Avery.
That's all I got. It could be Avery.
No, you have more. You have more.
I never even know if it can be Avery. I just came up with it.
He sold newspaper subscriptions in Albuquerque.
No, this was actually, I was living in Utah at the time.
Oh, are you a Church of Latter Day Saints person?
No. Okay. We were just there temporarily, and that just happened to be where this happened.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Okay. And so we know that he's from Utah, and we know that he went to cowboy camp.
Yeah, that's all I got. I mean, even after I got the idea, then I had to write the book, and then I had to sell the book, and then it takes a couple of years before the book comes out.
So Tammy, one second. So then you sat down and you wrote the cowboy story. Mm-hmm. How many revisions did you end up going through until it was published?
Okay, so you're talking about something that happened in 2004. So if I could go back in time and tell you, I would, but I don't really count drafts. I work, and I sometimes, you know, I might change a few words. Sometimes I might change a bunch. Sometimes I might, you know, just cut some words. So I really cannot tell you. I have no idea, but I knew that there was something good about this one. I felt extra excited about this one, and I sent it out, and
No critique group, no critique partners.
No, nothing.
No.
I knew nothing.
No regional meetings.
No. I knew nothing. I knew nobody. And all I did was I read picture books. I had that. But the more you read it, the structure, the feel of it sticks in your mind. And I recognized books that I loved. And then I was a school, you know, librarian for a while. So I was exposed to a lot of books there. And then I taught pre-K for a while, and I was exposed to a lot of picture books there. And so very self-taught. And so then I had my little, you know, writers and illustrators market guy, and I was trying to find out which editors would take unsolicited manuscripts. And so I sent it out through the snail mail, because again, this is 2004. And I got lots of form rejections back, but I got lots of rejections that said, this doesn't quite work for me, but send me more. Then I also had three houses take it to acquisitions team meetings. So I knew, I knew it was good, but so it was like, yes, but then it was like, no. And so I happened to be at the, I was at a conference. I think it was when I was at that New York conference in 2004. That was my very first SCBWI conference. Again, knew nobody, knew nothing, but there was a little packet of paper that listed some publishing houses and what they were looking for. And one of the houses was Sterling Publishing. They were just starting a children's book line, and they were taking unsolicited manuscripts. So I was like, well, I'll give them a try. And then, I mean, within a week, an editor emailed me, I still have it somewhere, about how excited he was about it and asked if he could take it to acquisitions. But again, it had been to acquisitions three times, so I wasn't holding my breath. But then I got the yes. And Sterling was new to picture books at the time, and they wanted to have an illustrator on board before they even offered me a contract. Now that's not how it is, but that's how it was like then. But then they decided it was silly to just keep waiting. And then they ended up giving me that contract. And yeah, that ended up being my first book. It is still available. It comes out in paperback still and board book. I still get emails from families who want to have cowboy camp birthday parties because they ask me to sign their copies of the books, maybe for like the attendees at the parties. It's really nice that it's reached so many people.
So once
I did it all on my own.
Yeah. Incredible. And you did it without going to cowboy camp.
I did not go to cowboy camp.
And you didn't have an agent.
But I've never been to cowboy camp.
You didn't have an agent even.
Oh, I know. I didn't even know what an agent was. I didn't know anything. I didn't. I mean, I was just working at my craft and trying to get better.
Okay. Look, you know, I tell the people on the show who know and sometimes forget, one out of about 5,000 manuscripts gets published.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the odds. And the one of 5,000, sometimes more than one book becomes a success. And sometimes writers write three or four and you don't seem to stop. 35 books. Well, so I would say, so do you recognize that you are like one in, I don't know, 500,000 writers? Do you recognize this? When you look in the mirror?
Sometimes I think about like the odds. I think if I would have known the odds when I was starting out, I think it would have been very stifling and scary. But all I knew was Dr. Hancock thought I was good. And so I didn't realize I was up against, you know, these odds and so much competition. So I tried to write the best stuff I could and I sent it out and I hoped for good. But I did get an agent shortly after that. So I went to the LA conference that year in 2004. And there I met my very first critique partner. I ended up going to some little critique group down in the basement of the hotel. And there was this one girl that I really connected with. And then she said, I think we should be critique partners. And I was like, oh, I don't know, because I had two little kids at home and I knew I had 2 hours to write. And I didn't want to give up my 2 hours to work with anybody else. I needed a focus. That's what I thought. But then, you know, she kind of like wore me down a little bit. And it was the best thing that ever happened that we became critique partners, because it was so good, because I loved how she was able to look at something and help me to make it better and to push me. And then critiquing her work helped me to be a better writer too. And so then we were started, then she and I started talking about, oh, maybe we should look into getting agents. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. But then when I did query agents, I was able to mention that I sold a book through the slush pile. And when I went to that LA conference, the manuscript that I had submitted for a consultation was nominated for the Sue Alexander Most Promising New Work Award. So I was able to put that in my query letter. And I didn't know much about agents. I mean, they don't have in 2004, there wasn't as much information out there. I mean, you had to really dig, but I knew that I had read this book called Storky. It was a YA novel, Storky, How I Lost My Nickname and Won the Girl by Deborah Garfinkel. And I thought that sounds, because at the time I was thinking I might write YA too. And I was like, that kind of sounds like my voice. And I Deborah had thanked her agent in the acknowledgement. So Laura was one of the agents, Laura Renner at Andrea Brown was one of the agents I contacted. And I had gotten one, I contacted three agents, four. One said no. One asked for a revision request, but then he ended up saying no. One said, let's just send it out how it is. But I wanted an editorial agent who would look at it and, you know, push me to make things better. And then one was Laura. And Laura Renner and I have been together now since 2004, which is a pretty good amount of time, like almost 19 years that we've been together.
You know, you talk about the things that in retrospect, you know, we should have done. You know, like having a critique buddy. For me, I'm going to now say a few words about StoryStorm.
Oh, I love StoryStorm. I do a post for StoryStorm every year. Go back there. Ever since StoryStorm started, I've been there.
Okay, so this is you gave the confessional about the query buddy. And my confessional is StoryStorm, because until I interviewed, Tara Lazar was my last interview of the last year, and you're my first interview of this year. And I wouldn't even look at StoryStorm. Oh, I'm an idea person. I'm a scientist. I'm an inventor. I know ideas. And so I didn't even look at StoryStorm until I interviewed Tara.
Really?
I said, you know, yes. I mean, I knew it existed, but why should I join when I teach people courses on how to have ideas? I said, oh, okay. She's such a nice lady. She writes so well. I'll give it a shot. And I'm having like ideas like popcorn.
See, that's so nice.
And Tara, you're listening, I know. So thank you very much. And here's the crazy thing. So the crazy thing is, of course, today when I was doing research on you, I read your blog on StoryStorm, and I found out that Wordy Birdie, which I love, was number 419 on your StoryStorm idea list.
I would say at least a third of my books got their start in StoryStorm, because I am not an idea person. I think that's the hardest part about this job, is coming up with a fresh, original, great idea. I can come up with okay ideas, but to get that sale, you need to have something that's really irresistible. And so I always like that push that in January, it used to be November, but now it's January, that I have to jot things down. And usually in the 30 ideas, usually I have one that's really good and I end up selling it. But I don't think that, I mean, the other stuff, they're like fine ideas, but it just, I got to find the one that really connects with me and I think has like the best potential. So, but it's good. And I mean, so I've been in StoryStorm for all of these years. So I have files on my computer, you know, from like 2010 and 2000. I mean, I don't even know how long it's been around, but I do a post every year. So if you want some ways that I get ideas, go read the, just type in my name as a keyword there and you'll see.
And now I'm going to, you can rest assured, for our next interview. So, it's a little crazy because, it is a little bit, what's the word? It's like, it's not real. It's not natural. It's like some kind of coercion to come up with an idea a day, but it damn well helps.
Think of it as a challenge. Think of it as a challenge to come up with an idea each day. Then it's kind of
I come up with ideas anyway, but this month I'm coming up with better ideas. So something is working. The question that I have for you is, what happens on February 1st? You say, I have all my ideas for 2023.
Excuse me, I didn't hear what you said. Say that again.
No, so you're doing StoryStorm this year also?
Always. Always. I can't even believe I can't even imagine a world where I wouldn't do StoryStorm, because I need the push.
Incredible. But then what happens in February?
Every year's different. I mean, I don't feel like, oh gosh, now I gotta start writing. I mean, coming up with ideas. I mean,
no, but so as somebody who's a StoryStorm pro, why is it limited to January? Why?
Oh, I write, I keep ideas because of this on my phone. Every time I get an idea, I just jot it down. Then I add it to another list later that's on my computer. But I think another good thing about StoryStorm is that it helps you to connect with other writers, because you know that you're not alone and these people are going through the same kind of struggles, and they might have a way of approaching idea getting that I've never tried. And then that's exciting to me.
We're starting to run out of time, and okay. I don't want to use up all of our new friendship, because I want to interview you again later in the year with one of your new books from 2023.
Ooh, like, hold on, like this one? All kinds of special.
For example, you want to say a few words?
Okay, this book comes out May 9th. It is illustrated by Fernando Martin, and this is his first book. And this book is just filled with happiness and joy. I have a friend named Flora who lives in Florida, and she has a mango tree. And one day, Flora and I were just messaging back and forth, and she was showing me pictures of the bowls and piles of mangoes that she had in her kitchen, because she was making jam and she was making this and that. And she said the sentence, "I have too many mangoes." And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea for a picture book. So originally this book was called Too Many Mangoes, And there's the words "too many mangoes" pop up in this a couple of times. But my editor thought that there were so many books out there with a food in the title that they wanted me to come up with something different. And so all kinds of special popped up in the book a couple of times. I'm like, well, that would be a good approach too. And so anyway, so that's like one of those things where I say celebrate the weird stuff in life. Like if I hadn't paid attention to Flora saying "too many mangoes," then I wouldn't have thought of this book. And "too many mangoes," it sounds good because you have that "many" and "mangoes." Those words sound good together. Plus, when you have too many mangoes, you already know what a big problem there's going to be. And I just thought it was like the perfect approach, the perfect little seed to an idea. So very excited about this book. And then Vanessa Brantley Newton and I have Mary Had a Little Glam, which was very successful. And then in 2022, we came up with Mary Had a Little Plan. And in 2023, we are going to have Mary Had a Little Jam. And that's like the music kind of jam, because Vanessa, I think Vanessa is Mary. If you ever met Vanessa Brantley Newton, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's Mary. But she's very musical. And so I thought that'd be a fun one to do too. So jam and mangoes. Look for those in 2023.
It's wonderful. I have an exercise called Mary Had a Little, and then you have to fill in with something very weird.
Oh, yeah.
Weirder than jam, plam, and glam. Well, okay. So what I think that what your masterful ability, which is really masterful, is to take these weird and wonderful ideas and to craft the words around them and to come up with an ending that is satisfying for kids. Mm-hmm. And that is such a wonderful, special gift that the rest of us can only aspire to. Before I let you go, I have to mention two things. The second one I'm going to forget. The first is that I learned something, you know, this wonderful book of yours, But the Bear Came Back.
Yes. Hold on. Hold on, I got it.
Okay.
Okay, so But the Bear Came Back.
Yeah, and I'm reading it and I'm saying, oh my goodness, it reminds me of a song from the 1940s or 50s.
Yes, that's where I got the idea to write the book.
The cat came back. Yes, thought he was a goner.
That's exactly what triggered this idea. I was listening to NPR because I love NPR, and they were playing that song, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And so even though this doesn't have that lyrical idea, but I love that "but" and "bear" and "back." I like that alliterative feel. I mean,
so you have at least one reader who thought of that.
Yes.
Without knowing.
Well, very nice. Because I don't think a lot of people would have gotten that right away. So I would give you a gold star.
You have to be, thank you, but you have to be an ancient person. Because that song was big in the 50s and 60s. I mean, how many people, you know.
That song is very, very old. Like I think, wasn't it written in the 1800s? I think it might have been.
It could be. I'm not that old.
I didn't think so.
So before we part ways for today, do you have like a favorite? You mentioned somewhere that your books went on to appear in plays. And I thought, isn't that remarkable? Do I infer correctly that your books take on a life of their own once they're published?
Oh, yes. I mean, a lot of times they get published in different languages. And I love knowing that a kid here in Oklahoma could be reading the exact same book that a kid in France is reading. That's fantastic to me. A lot of my books have been developed into musicals. And when that happens, I get script approval because, you know, they have to extend the manuscript quite a bit. So I want to make sure that everything still stays true to my character. So that's really fun. A bunch of my books have been musicals, but I've only seen one. And it was an amazing experience. It was in a beautiful theater. I was in a crowd of first and second graders that I had just seen all that week at school visits. And so I remember when I walked in, the kids were like, that's Tara Sauer. I mean, it was a very big day for me. So yeah, so it's just really fun to see how that happens. Plus another great thing, sometimes kids dress up as my characters for like, dress up like your favorite character at school day. It's just really neat. And sometimes kids will mail me their versions of a book that I've written. I mean, like instead of caring for your lion, they'll do like caring for your penguin or caring for your blah, blah, blah. And so that's kind of fun. So.
And your first foreign sale was which book and which language?
It was Princess in Training, and it came out in Hebrew, which was fantastic because I'd never, that's my only book that came out in Hebrew. And I love it that when I share it with kids, they're not expecting to open it in reverse. And it's just, it just looks so beautiful in Hebrew.
I'm here in Israel, and I'm going to get you a copy.
Okay, that sounds good.
And one for my grandkids.
Okay.
We have kind of run out of time. I mean, we're way beyond the time, but you know, who cares? Are there any other tips for aspiring writers that we haven't talked about?
Oh goodness, there's so many tips. Of course, the top ones are read, 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 write, 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 revise, revise, revise. I am in two critique groups now, and when it comes to critique groups, here's a good tip. Find people who are at least as good as you are, if not better. You want people to push you to make something that's good, great, if possible. It's nice to hear, oh, I love it. That's so wonderful. But you also need somebody who's going to like notice things that could really stand to have a little extra work put into it. Be nice, be a nice person in this business. That would be a good thing. Get comfortable with wanting to do school visits. I mean, I'm doing a school visit tomorrow. I'm doing a school visit the next week. I'm doing two more the next week. I never really thought that this would be part of my job to be out there. But again, I was an elementary school teacher, so it's fun for me to be back into schools. And so I get to go into these schools and I get to talk about what I love the most. And then I get to go home, and that's pretty great. No parent needs to call me. I don't have homework to grade.
Okay, so, but keep in mind that 99.9% of the writers don't have books to share with the kids. So they're not doing school visits yet.
But I'm just saying, keep that in mind that that's probably going to be part of the package deal I know not everybody would feel comfortable doing that, but I'm just saying, just keeping in mind that it's a nice little lucrative part of this business. Plus it keeps you in touch with your audience. And sometimes when I'm at a school visit, I get a good idea for a book. So that's nice. So maybe tomorrow I'll come home with a good idea. Cause I tell kids that sometimes I get ideas from kids. And so what that tells kids to do is after my visit, they're like, Tammy Sauer. And then they come running up to me to give me good ideas. I'm like, oh, so it's a pretty good gig. I like that very much. Writing wise, let's see. Oh, I always tell people tell as much as possible in as little as possible, which means only use the best words in the best order for your books, because I just feel like that makes it tighter, more succinct. Make sure you allow space for the illustrator to tell half of the story through the art, because that just helps the book to feel more complete, and you want your text to rely on the art for some of it. I mean, Caring for Your Lion is a complete example of this, because the text basically tells you how easy it is to care for your lion, but then you see in the illustrations, it's absolutely the worst thing ever. So I'd say those would be some of my tips to help people who are wanting to be a picture book author, or who are just wanting to, you know, get better at writing picture books.
So before we go, we didn't mention, it's impossible to mention all your books. We didn't mention The Bunnies, which also came out this year.
Hold on. I've got it. I think I've got it. Oh no, it's okay. Way up. It's way up on my shelf.
Okay. So I know why your endings are so nice and why good things happen at the end of the book, because Tammy Sauer, you are an incredible, positive and happy human being. It shows in your writing, it shows in your character, it shows in this interview. I hate to let you go, but we've been here for almost an hour.
I've got work to do.
Yes, and because I don't know whether because I'm Jewish, because I'm a guy. I was kind of hoping, I'm just gonna tell you this, not the thousands of people that are listening. Sometimes I almost want the wolves to win.
Well, that wolf wins. He got exactly what he wanted. If you paid attention to the book, all he wants is a friend. He's a lone wolf who's so lonely. All he wants is a friend, and he's become enamored with bunnies. I mean, he's in a bunny fan club. He had the bunny slippers. All he wanted was for the bunnies to love him. And so I feel like he got exactly what he wanted. And it was unexpected. So I think that's a good thing in picture books too, is like give the readers the unexpected. They're the whole way through, the main bunny thinks that they're going to be gobbled up by this wolf. So he's doing everything in his power to try to convince the wolf to leave Bunnyville. And then
nobody's here.
What's that? Oh yeah.
Nobody's here.
Nobody's here. So it's the book called Nobody's Here, but it's the book that's filled with bunnies.
Okay. And that is why you are an incredible, incredibly successful writer.
Well, thank you.
So I'm going to go now and take my manuscript where the wolf only wants to eat the bunny and not to be friends. And I'll say, what would Tammy Sauer do with this?
Let me just tell you a quick secret, then I gotta go. Okay, my book Nugget and Fang is probably one of my most successful books. In it, a shark and a minnow who are best friends. I mean, it's just great. Well, in the original first drafts, I actually had Fang eat Nugget. And I sent it to my editor or my agent. My agent said, I love it, but I really don't think one main character should eat the other main character. And I'm like, well, shoot, I thought that was super funny. But then, you know, she's had me like think about it. And it took me a while to come up with an ending that worked for me. But she was right, because I didn't want to traumatize any of my readers. But just so you know, originally, the shark ate the minnow.
Now everything makes sense. Tammy Sauer, thank you for an hour of your time. You could have written a best-selling book. I'm really so happy to meet you.
Very happy to meet you.
Everybody go out and purchase Underpants, the book, not the article of clothing.
Yes.
Tammy Sauer, I'm going to track you down in May to talk about the new book, and have a splendid day. And thanks so much for spending time with the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And this is Mel Rosenberg thanking Tammy Sauer. And everybody, have a wonderful day.
Thank you, too. You have a great, wonderful day as well. Bye-bye.
Bye.